Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 29th of October, recording at 9:14 p.m. And this is the last recording at British Summer Time for 2010, as the clocks will be rolled back 1 hour on Sunday. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. For global stock markets, it's been a week of consolidation after some very, very strong gains. And consolidation is a euphemism for a little bit of softening in most, but not all, stock markets. The ASEAN sector in particular remains quite firm. And I think Malaysia closed at a new high for the year. Here today, and the South American stock markets are very firm overall. Now, European stock markets, though, have seen a little bit of consolidation. The U.S. has a bit, but not much. It hasn't given up much, and I think actually the NASDAQ has pushed a little higher in here. Now, long-dated government bond prices have been soft, or they were earlier in the week, a little bit steadier here today, and there was the rally, actually, or the slight rally within what looked like newly forming downtrends commenced yesterday. In currencies, the dollar, which had lost downside momentum 2 or 3 weeks ago, gave up a lot of those gains in here towards the latter part of this week, and is really quite soft overall. That has really pumped some life back into precious metals, which had been consolidating gains. The leader, as we had seen earlier in this overall medium-term cycle, which commenced in terms of upward breakouts following lengthy consolidation, which commenced in September of 2009. And say the leader on that move to the upside was palladium, and palladium has roared further into new high ground this week, closing at $646.95 here this evening. Gold again is very firm, 1358.80. That's broken up out of a little range and is close to its highs, just above the 160 level. Silver surged in here again today, up 84 cents. And platinum's lagging, but very steady overall, currently trading at 1706. Now, industrial metals, which had been strong, have seen a pullback in consolidation this week, led by copper. And oil has continued to range, hovering just above the $80 level, currently $81.41. The agricultural commodities have remained really quite firm overall. And the big story in the grain and bean market, well, we've had rough rice, which has been very strong, and in many consecutive days to the upside. And we've had also a pretty good rebound by wheat, which looks to be in an overall consolidation. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, first, as far as stock markets are concerned, they had run upwards very strongly from late August, as I've mentioned in all the interim audios, SSON. They became quite overbought in the short term. Some of the front runners, such as the thinner South American stock markets. That's just about everything except for Brazil, and Brazil's been very steady. markets such as Chile and Colombia and Peru had been racing upwards and accelerating relative to their 200-day moving averages, so are overextended. The ASEAN sector is in a similar, not quite so strong position, but certainly overextended relative to the MAs. Now, that's a background that suggests that we will see, at minimum, a pause and consolidation for a number of stock markets. The big question in terms of shorter term, near term, short to medium term activity is, will the stock markets get a tight consolidation without giving up much of their gains overall, or will we see something more along the lines of mean reversion? Well, keep an eye particularly on those Asian leaders, because I think that would provide some insights overall. But so far, the consolidation is quite tight. And what has to be remembered is that the overall patterns for most of the bigger stock markets around the world show quite a considerable amount of what should be underlying support from the very lengthy consolidation that really started as early as September and October of 2009 and continued right on up until recently before we saw a number of these stock markets move higher. And indeed, not all of them have broken above their April highs, but a good many have. I mean, the laggards tend to be in Europe, and also the S&P has not yet broken above its April high, nor has the Dow, but the NASDAQ 100 index has. But overall, and I weigh up these technical patterns, and they're reasonably steady. And they're due for a consolidation, as I say, a reaction in consolidation. There's a chance that that could become self-feeding for some reason or another, and I'll discuss some possibilities on that, and cause this to spill over into a correction. But I don't think it would be anything serious. Certainly nothing as terrifying as that April to July move that we saw. Little bit of hyperbole there. I don't think the overall move was that terrifying, and nor did I or Owen at the time as we commented on it, but there were plenty of people who were extrapolating that downward reaction, as you know. So where do we stand? Short-term pause, at least. Possibly outside chance that it could extend into something a little bit bigger, but we'd really have to see moves back beneath the rising 200-day moving averages by the more important stock markets, and I don't think they're going to do that. The main reason I don't think that they're going to do that is because of the underlying support that I mentioned a moment ago, and also because monetary policy remains positive. In the short term, there are some questions as to whether markets have run ahead relative to the anticipated quantitative easing that we're going to get from the Fed. Excuse me, I'm going to take a drink of water, a little bit of scratchiness in We'll know more about that after the Fed speaks. I think it's on Wednesday. But overall, I think that any pullback is a buying opportunity, and that we will see higher levels by year end and probably into the first quarter of 2011 at least. Now, there is one factor that I've mentioned repeatedly, as is Owen, that does concern us considerably, that could cause trouble. Not at today's levels, but looking at what the charts and looking at what we see and also what we hear, it's commodity price inflation, particularly food price inflation. And weather conditions, global weather conditions, have been playing absolute havoc with crops, and more so than anything that I have seen for really quite a while. And I think this is more serious than some of the weather turbulence that caused food prices to spike higher in 2008, in the first quarter of 2008, when they saw their main upside moves. I think that what I read about crop prospects, that this is more serious this time. Now, weather is always the key variable with agricultural commodities, and the supply is decreasing, and I think people were often quite complacent about supply overall. And we're going to see some potentially serious shortages. And some of the more informed sources that I speak to feel that China is buying corn heavily. That in China, the demand also for soybean meal is growing dramatically. Now, that's primarily for animal feed, something that has been forecast for a long time. In the United States, the corn crop is not as good as the USDA had indicated. And we've been on top of that story for several months now, but it seems the USDA, much like authoritarian regimes, tends to leak out the bad news rather gradually. So they'll sort of say everything's fine initially, and then gradually eke out some of the unfavorable data. And it looks like we may well get a significant corn shortage. You might think, well, why not just cut the ethanol production in the United States? But apparently they're locked into a situation where they need to continue to use the corn for ethanol. The main reason for that appears to be that the refiners were not upgraded. They haven't been upgraded in some time, and to get a higher level of octane, which is desired and required in petrol, gasoline, as they call it in the USA, they're the cheapest way that they can actually do that is to add ethanol. Now, I noticed that while I was in the USA and had a rental car. And was filling it, then I think 10% of the fuel everywhere where I stopped was ethanol. So really, the industry is not in a position right now to cut back on that demand. So really, put it all together, and looking at the chart patterns as well, it looks like we could see some quite significant additional upside moves in these grain and bean prices. And then rice. Rice crops have been damaged severely, less in the United States, but some damage there, significantly in the Philippines, significantly in Thailand due to flooding, and I believe China as well. So rice prices, and rices had actually been a laggard until quite recently, but it's up 50% in a few months, and higher food prices are going to hit the world's poor particularly hard. So that's an unfortunate situation that is developing, and if we get some of the agricultural price spikes that I think we might see, that I think will weigh on long-dated government bond markets and also in time weigh on stock markets. So we do have to watch out for that. Now, in the industrial commodity markets, I don't think there'll be any subscriber who isn't familiar with the whole China saga regarding the reduced exports and, in some instances, an embargo on the exporting of rare earths metals, which are essential for so many high and also low-tech machines, including your mobile phones. China obviously denies that there are any embargoes, but the higher prices that we have seen have risen dramatically for rare earths products, and that's good news for China should it wish to sell any more of these rare earths, and it's caused a bit of panic from Tokyo to the U.S. Defense Department. Now, I think it's pretty obvious that in seeing and reading about this saga involving rare earths, that other commodity producers are going to realize that if they hold back a little bit of supply, that they can get substantially more money for their product at a time when prices are actually rising globally. Look at the run that we've seen in palladium recently. Most of the palladium comes from Russia, and there are already rumors that Russia had either had a diminished stockpile of palladium or was going to hold back some of that palladium. That has happened before, and it looks like it's happening once again. Now, the one that would really be a concern would be if OPEC were to decide that it was fed up with the weakening US dollar, in which it receives most of its revenue, and felt that it could follow suit and hold back on supplies to achieve a higher price. They've done that before. As we know, we saw that in the 1970s and in the 1980s. A lot of people say, well, OPEC doesn't want to do this. They're talking about the need for petrol to stay in the $70 to $80 range, and they don't want to trigger a global recession. Well, the Saudis may feel that way, but other OPEC producers are maybe a little less friendly to the West and are unlikely to feel similarly. So, in the unexpected or unintended consequences realm, the weak US dollar, which the Fed has been engineering, may well cause more commodity producers and exporters to hold back supplies to drive prices up. To offset the depreciation of the US dollar and to also increase prices at a time when global demand has been rising due to the very strong Asian-led economic recovery and the fact that even the lagging economies are not in double-dip recession. Okay, so we need to be concerned about that. And precious metals, there's a great piece by David Hale that I'm using as a lead item here. It was in the Financial Times yesterday. You might have seen it. A lot of interesting statistics. It's not all that often that you see some new information on gold, but he feels that China will be buying and retaining a lot more gold in the years ahead, building up its stockpile, just as the United States did before the US dollar took over as the world's reserve currency in the last century. Okay, Moving on, what about these long-dated government bonds? I think they're shorts on rallies. Quantitative easing, or the fear of quantitative easing, leading to further buying by central banks, from the ECB to the Bank of Japan, to the Fed, most of all, may cause long-dated yields to remain low a little longer. But the main move on the upside over the long term has surely got to be higher long-dated government bond yields, given the massive amount of supply that has been coming on stream due to and due to all the monetary printing that is taking place around the world. And the next period that of or the next inflation concern may well be triggered by these commodity prices, and I think probably the bond buyers and holders are the ones who have been least aware of what has been taking place in the commodity markets, because they've been focusing, understandably, given their portfolios, on the deflationary and double dip recession scenarios. My feeling is that we're in the early stages of a secular bear market in government long-dated government bond prices, meaning that the yields have bottomed out and will range sideways to higher over the next many years. Key question is, how much sideways activity do they have between the steps to the upside? Nobody knows the answer to that, but what we do know is that current yields, and yields that have been reached over the, well, really from 2008 to more recently, are very much on the side of historic lows, and almost certainly cannot be maintained. So that trend is upwards. Therefore, I'm only interested in playing long-dated government bonds on the short side. And I don't like the corporate bond sector all that much. I just mentioned on the long-dated government bonds, I'm talking primarily of OECD. I think some of the emerging market government debt is in a different position. First, there hasn't been the same avalanche of supply. Those countries have current account surpluses for the most part, and the situations aren't comparable with what I just described for U.S. treasuries, for instance. Now, corporate bonds, the mere fact that so many companies have rushed to the market to issue bonds to lock in the low interest rates, whether they needed the capital or not, ought to be a major, major warning for those who hold corporate bonds or are thinking of buying corporate bonds. Now, why would companies rush to the market if they don't need the capital? Because, and the simple answer is because the yields are so cheap that they'll take the cash now and they can use it later when they may require it, and when they suspect that interest rates will be higher. So if interest rates go higher, that means people will start to see a capital loss on any investments in those longer dated corporate bonds, and I think that's a risky area. Now, there's a huge amount of money, investor money, in corporate bonds and also in government bonds, but I think particularly in the corporate bond sector, and I suspect that some of that will come out and fuel the cyclical bull market, fuel the cyclical bull market in equities that has resumed recently. Now, will that cyclical bull be punctuated by a spike in commodity prices? Well, that's a real possibility, but we'll see. and we'll be able to monitor that all the way. And forewarned is forearmed, and that's why I'm mentioning it at this time. Okay, what about currencies? It would be nice to see a little bit of stability, but I'm not at all sure that we'll get that for all that long. The dollar is overextended on the downside, and it had lost downside momentum recently, but we've seen a pretty feeble rally so far, and I think we should let charts be our guide. And there is a risk that we'll see a bit of additional US dollar weakness sooner rather than later. The currency that or the country that most needs a weaker currency right now, I don't think it's the USA, I think it's Japan. I've said that before on a number of occasions, but Japan has been pretty inept in its intervention to date, and we see the impact of this in the very weak performance of the Japanese stock market relative to other Asian stock markets, indeed relative to other global stock markets. And we also see that in the additional deflationary pressures that have helped to keep the JGB, Japanese government bond yields, so low overall. Now, my feeling is forget about Japan's stock market as a recovery candidate as long as the yen is as firm as it currently is. As I've said before, weakening a currency is one of the easier things for a central bank to do. Just ask Ben Bernanke. And really, all the BOJ, if they wish to have a weaker yen, would need to do would be perhaps come in with a big hit intervention near this 80 yen to the dollar level, and then announce that you are going to do anything and everything required to get the dollar yen rate back up into the 90s. And I think the market would do the work for the BOJ and give them a profit on the actual trade. Are they going to do that? Well, I think they should do that, but will they actually do it? I would have thought so, but it would pay to be a fly on the wall in the BOJ. And on that note, interesting times, and not without opportunities in here. I'm still holding on to a fully invested portfolio of equities. I bought more Denison mines because the uranium price had a good jump to the upside this week. And again, I think that's an example of if not commodity producers holding back supply, then investors and speculators looking at cheap assets. And I have previously described uranium as the cheapest metal, and it surely qualifies for that. But it has moved up about 20% in the last couple of months. And on that note, I wish you all a very good weekend. All the best.